260 Dugout Podcast is sponsored by McMahon's Best One Auto, GSP Hitting, and Old Fort Baseball Company.
Yeah. DC. Turn the lights on the diamond. Man. This that 260 Dugout. Mic up, DC in the chair, talking for Wayne Dirt. Red clay in the air, from the sandlot days. Scrape knees, hand-me-down gloves to park few nights. Packed seats, hometown love, Summer City Sluggers. Little homies with a dream. Little league lines, chalk bright, fresh seams. Ask the guests how it started, how they carried the doubt. Now they legends in the making on the 260 Dugout. Yeah, it's that 260 Dugout. Pull up, let the stories come out. From the cages to the lights, that's what we about. Four ain't on the cow, we ain't never gonna bow out. 260 Dugout.
Say it.
260 Dugout.
Louder.
From the kids to the pros, that's the route. Every dream gets a swing in the 260 Dugout.
Parkview Field, see the 10 caps play. Sunset sitting on the third baseline all day. Cold drink, crowd buzz, first pitch in the dirt. Whole city in the stands, rocking same logo shirts. DC talking with the voices that we grew up around. Ground crew to the coaches that protected the mound. If you ever felt that pressure with two strikes and two out, you already know the feeling of the 260 Dugout. Yeah,
it's that 260 Dugout. Pull up, let the stories come out. From the pages to the lights, that's what we about. Four ain't on the cap, we ain't ever gonna bow out. 260 Dugout.
Say it.
260 Dugout.
Louder.
From the kids to the pros, that's the route. Every dream gets a swing in the 260 Dugout.
From the backstop fence to the radio waves.
Radio waves.
Every small town spark, every big league craze.
Big league craze.
If you ever caught hope in the palm of your hand, you part of this story, you part of this land.
It's that 260 Dugout. Pull up, let the stories come out. From the cages to the lights, that's what we about. Four ain't on the cap, we ain't never gonna bow out. 260 Dugout.
Hey.
260 Dugout.
And welcome in. This is the 260 Dugout Podcast. I am your host, DC Hendrix. Before we get started, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Apple, Google Play, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts are available. Go ahead and make us one of your favorites by subscribing to keep up with the podcast. And of course, as you are on Apple or Spotify, click those fancy words called write a review and let us know what you are thinking of this show. So many ranting reviews, some raving reviews going on with the podcast. Been seeing them. Appreciate everybody's support throughout this journey. I went out to semi-state action, got a lot of love when I attended that. I walk in and Coach Bolin of the St. Francis softball program is the first person I see as soon as I walk through the gate. Obviously walked up and said how much he loved the pod and appreciate me having him on. And yeah, a whole bunch of, you know, moms stop me when I go out to these games. Thank you so much for having my kid on your podcast. They enjoyed it so much. They still talk about it. Yeah, dad's coming up to me. Shout out to Greg Stockwell's dad from Homestead who came up to me throughout this season as well and said how much he enjoys it. There's so many great people that are a big reason that this podcast is successful. But I would argue that there's one person that may be a little bit more responsible for the success of this podcast, besides our sponsors, by the way, shout out them, O4 Baseball Company, GSP Hitting, and McMahon's Best One Auto. But there is one person that I do have to give credit to because he was one of those people that lit a fire in me to finally do this. You know, we've been talking about how much there is a need for coverage of baseball in and around the Fort Wayne area. And the first person that I think of, and this is just me, the first person that I think of when I think of Fort Wayne baseball, because I'm coming up, I come out of high school and I start playing in this adult baseball league. And the first person that I am aware of in this adult league, and also met this person again later once I started joining radio back in 2014, the first person I see when I stepped in the radio station building was the person that I associate with baseball. And that is the one and only Mr. Jim Shevlin, who is finally gracing his presence on this podcast. Jim, what's going on?
Mom, I made it. I finally made the podcast, the 260 Dugout Podcast. Thanks, DC. I appreciate it.
Oh, this is so cool. So I don't think in a million years would have pictured me being the interviewer to you.
Hey, Why not?
I don't think in a million years I would have pictured this happening.
I've got a lot of goofy stories to tell.
Sure you do. And a lot of great stories and a lot of memories that I want to highlight to the listeners. You are, like I said, when I think of baseball in and around Fort Wayne, you're the first name that comes up. And you're looking at me like, is it good or bad? Or
no, I love baseball, as you well know, and, yep, and many people do. But baseball has done so much for me as a person. When I was a kid, my father was my hero, and he was a very understated gentleman, was a lineman for the General Telephone Company. Mm. He put on the spikes and he'd climb telephone poles all day long and then come home just completely whipped, just tired. But I'd always say, Dad, can we play catch?
Mm.
He would never turn me down, DC. Mm. And so we would go out in the backyard or the front yard on the sidewalk and we play catch. And when I was 13, my dad passed away suddenly from heart attacks. And I was kind of rudderless as far as a male mentor. But I continued to play baseball. And the game of baseball put some gentlemen in my life as coaches, mm-hmm, that I wouldn't have met otherwise, who made sure I stayed on the same path. There's two paths you can choose, the right path and the wrong path.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness I played baseball and had these gentlemen in my life so that I could choose the correct path. And so with that said, I feel I will owe a debt of gratitude to the game of baseball for the rest of my life. I'll never fully repay that, but I will love paying it back the rest of my life. I love the game, and I'd Same. Love to be an ambassador.
Same. You know my story, too. It's very similar.
Sure.
Matt Harmon, I credit him all the time. Coach Kleinschmidt, who is still coaching Wildcat these days. I don't know which place he's at coaching Wildcat, but I know he's still coaching because I've seen his little face on the Wildcat post on Instagram. So he's still, so shout out to both of them for, you know, and my JV coach from my sophomore year, Coach Fuller, at Southside as well. Those coaches did the same thing for me. I will shout them out forever. And just like you, will pay my dues as long as I can. That's why I have this podcast.
That's right. Now, listening to you and what you just said there, talking about your coaches, I was the president of St. Joe Little League back in 1993. And I had my manager's meeting. And of course that was T-ball coaches all the way up through big league, 18-year-olds,
mm-hmm,
and softball as well. So I had probably about 80 people in the room, and I told them, I said, okay, I want to ask you all a question. How many of you played Little League baseball? Probably 75% raised their hands.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, of those, how many people remember the name of their coach? Everybody kept their hands up.
Mm-hmm.
They all remembered their coach, just like you just showed me right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look around the room and remember this, because regardless of the experience, if it was a great experience, if it was a nasty experience, these kids will remember you for the rest of their lives.
It's true.
Just like you're remembering your coaches. So I said, make it a good experience.
That's and, very true.
Yeah.
Very, very, very true. So I definitely, you know, there's a lot to, you know, take in with you with baseball, and we gotta go back. So you mentioned, so when was the moment that you knew? Because I feel like we all, as baseball historians and baseball lovers, have that moment when we fall in love with the game of baseball. For me, it was watching, you know, this obviously didn't age that well, but watching Sammy Sosa, you know, we don't have to get into,
yeah,
you know, scandals.
But that was exciting.
But
that
watching Sammy
people.
Sosa and watching the hop he used to do, mm-hmm, after he knew he hit a bomb. I don't know if it was just called a hop step or what it was exactly,
yeah,
called. But watching stuff like that and watching him play the game, he played with so much passion. King Griffey Jr. Got to watch him coming in playing, you know, with King Griffey Sr. Got to watch that. Got to watch, of course, the early years of Alex Rodriguez, because I'm a Mariners fan, so there's going to be a lot of Mariners stuff,
mm-hmm,
in there. Ichiro Suzuki, though, is what took it to a whole new level when he came in. I've always been a hitting guy, so watching guys that can hit the ball, like people like Ichiro Suzuki, I admire that. But so you grew up in a much different time. What was, who were the players and what was the moment that you knew you fell in love with the game of baseball?
I think it started in the backyard. If I didn't have anybody to goof around with, ride bikes with, play ball with, I would take a wiffle ball and a wiffle ball bat, throw it up in the air and hit it. And I was in the World Series. You know, I had a great imagination back then.
Yeah.
And we had kind of a long backyard, you know, and if I'd hit one out, I was Mickey Mantle.
See, my age, we had some electronics. So we had
a... Yeah, what were those? Oh, yeah. You know, if it had electronics when I was little, I'd be my size, but 450 pounds and not leave the room. But because I would love that. But we didn't. So thank goodness I had to get outside. But that's what I would do. I would simulate, you know, seventh game of the World Series and Mickey Mantle. I'd run the bases and oh, what a feeling that was even then. But as I said, my dad used to play catch with me. He was a Chicago White Sox fan. My uncle and my dad took me on the train from Fort Wayne to my first big league game in 1964 to watch the Cubs play the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I saw Roberto Clemente. Ooh. We were down the right field line. He got a ball toward the corner and threw a strike on the fly to his catcher. And I don't know if Manny Sanguian was there yet or not in 64, but he threw a strike to the catcher. And I believe it might have been Ernie Banks that he got out at the plate. But it was just amazing. And my uncle turns to me and said, Jim, don't ever forget that. and here I am, you know, 60-plus years later talking about that play. But those were the things in baseball that you never know. When you go to a game, you never know what's going to unfold in front of you, DC.
It's true.
And, you know, I tell the story about – on a Saturday morning, I'm finishing up my show. This was probably about 8-9 years ago. And I was going to go to my grandson's Little League game. And so my son texts me just as I get out the air. He goes, take your time, Dad. The opponents just scored 8 runs in the top of the first and they're still batting. Mm. I go, okay. So I get over there and they just made the third out. My grandson's team came up and DC... My grandson's team scored 27 runs in the bottom of the first inning.
Whoa.
This was 9 years ago. This was a Little League game, and I was just so – and it was a legit. It was – there was base hits all over the place. Yeah, some errors and things, but base
hits – not all walks.
Right, yeah. And it wasn't – you know, it was just one of those things. But I was so glad I went to that game because I would have missed that. I saw something that I would likely never see again. And that's why if you have a chance to go to anything from a T-ball game up to a Major League Baseball game, go. Because you don't know what you're going to see. You could see some kind of history happen right there in front of you. And that's the cool thing about baseball specifically, but sports in general.
Yeah, definitely sports in general. I've only got to go to a few Major League Baseball games in my life and hoping to ramp that number up a little bit more. I've been to a couple White Sox games, lots of Cubs games, Reds. I haven't been to the Tiger Stadium yet.
Oh, Comerica?
I've been to Comerica.
My dad used to take me to Tiger Stadium once a year, and it's when the Oakland A's would come to town, and we would plan that. And my hero was Rick Monday, and he became my baseball hero because I was sifting through some baseball cards back in like 1968. And I came across Rick Monday and I thought, oh, let's see, he's left-handed like I am. Okay, those are pretty cool uniforms, the green and gold.
Yeah.
They became my favorite team. It was just that.
I was hoping we would get through the pod without mentioning the A's.
Mariners.
Yeah. Apparently.
Nope. Not going to do it. But that was when the youngsters on the team were Reggie Jackson, ooh, Joe Rudy, Sal Bando, Burt Campaneris. You know, Dave Duncan, Gene Tennis, Catfish Hunter.
I was going to say, you can't miss Catfish.
And I'm going to tell you a story real quick, and I know only got 30 minutes, but you know, we'll deal with that when 30 minutes comes. But
just going to end it right abruptly.
Back in 1971, when Vida Blue was a rookie, his rookie season, and he set the Major League Baseball world on fire. Mm-hmm. He was a flame-throwing lefty, and he started the All-Star game in Tiger Stadium, but when my dad and I in late July were going to go to Tiger Stadium. It was on a Saturday. Well, Friday night, a kid from the neighborhood stopped over at the house and said, "Hey, Jim, we got an extra ticket to the doubleheader Sunday, Tigers and A's. Do you want to go with us?" And they said, "Vita Blue's pitching."
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, man. So I went and asked my dad. And he goes, "Well, we can only afford to send you to one game. You can either go with me on Saturday or you can go with your friends on Sunday." And DC, something told me to say, I'll go with you, Dad. And we went. I think the A's won 6-3. Sal Bando hits a 3-run bomb and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to see Vita Blue pitch. But 2 weeks later, my dad had a series of massive heart attacks, working overtime on a Saturday morning. And by Sunday, he had passed. So I will never regret that answer to him that I'll go with you, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing he said to me in his life, I walked into the intensive care unit, and of course with his heart attacks, they were pounding on his chest, so they were breaking ribs and everything. So he was all gauzed up and everything too, had the oxygen on, and they said, "You can go in and see him." And I didn't know what to say. And so I just look at him and I blurted out, "Vita won his 20th today." And he looks at me and smiles and said, "That's our guy."
Mm.
And that's the last thing we spoke to each other.
Mm.
And so in all those years, Vita Blue and my dad and me, that was cool. You know, so those, anyway.
That is what, you know, baseball creates, you know, this special bond.
Yeah.
You know, not only between, you know, father and son, brothers, friends. Baseball does it like no other. And it's mainly because, like, and I always use this comparison, like, you can play soccer alone.
Mm-hmm.
You can play basketball alone. Baseball, I mean, you technically can, but it's a lot more enjoyable with someone to throw the ball back to you, someone to catch it. You know, there's nothing like playing catch. And you're going to remember those memories playing catch with Dad forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And when I was 12 and I was pitching in Little League,
yeah,
I started throwing a little harder, and my dad was having a little bit of trouble catching me. And so what I would do, I would take a rubber ball, and we had the two-car attached garage. So I would go out into the street, halfway into the street. That was, you know, the distance, and I would throw the ball against the garage door. And from what I understand from my next door neighbors, I threw it all the time. And to the point where my neighbors nicknamed me Boom Boom, because that's all they would hear in the morning when they'd wake up, is boom, boom, with that rubber ball hitting the garage door next door. So, but hey, it was therapeutic.
Yeah. And you kept playing, you know, even after that. You know, you talked about the coaches that took over and, you know, kept your love alive for the game of baseball, and you ended up playing at Bishop Dwenger
yes.
High School. So
yeah.
How did everything, you know, go for you in high school, and how did everything, you know, catch me up on what happened in high school and beyond? What happened for you as a player?
Here we go. Okay. I went out for baseball as a freshman at Bishop Dwenger.
Yeah.
And, about the second or third practice in, the coach, says, "Okay, we're not going to keep any freshmen. So this is your last practice." Oh, great. Okay. So I went home, tried out for a Mickey Mantle League team, 15 and 16 year olds. And, the last practice before cuts, I asked the coach if I could pitch, and, he says, "Sure." And so, you know, he tried and I did it. He called me that night and said, "Hey, you just pitched your way onto this team." Cause he said you were on the cut list. So, oh, okay. So I made that team, and then, came back my sophomore year, tried out again at Dwenger, made the team. Dave Scudder had just taken over as the baseball coach, longtime basketball coach at Dwenger, and golf as well, and just an accomplished athlete himself. But sophomore year, I made the team, and then Jerry Houck, our junior star, broke his hand and was out. So I ended up taking his place. I ended up pitching like 37 innings as a sophomore. We were just under 500. Next year, we were playing. Hauk was healthy, and he was probably the best baseball player I ever played with or against in all my years. He and John Summers and myself, Kip Johnson, Donnie Hayden, guys like that. We played, and we were finished, or we were projected to finish seventh in the nine-team SAC at that time.
Ouch.
And we ended up winning the SAC with a 7-2 record.
Mm.
I threw 80 innings that year, and they basically scuttered, just hand me the ball and say, here, give it back when it's over. And, you know, I had a pretty good year. I had three conference shutouts. I shut out Snyder, Northside, and Harding.
What pitches were you throwing at this time?
Everything but a fastball.
Everything but a fastball.
But yeah, well, I'd throw a little fastball, but not much of one. But I threw a curveball, an overhand curveball, slider. I would throw my knuckleball.
Mm.
And in fact, funny story.
I've heard about that knuckleball.
It used to be good when I was throwing it, yeah. Funny story. I'm pitching at Schoff Park to John Nonnemaker, and I'm pitching to a kid, and all of a sudden he calls time. There's two strikes on the kid. He calls time, come out. It's like 1-2. What are you doing? He goes, because he dropped the curveball sign a couple of times. I shook him off, and he kept dropping it. He comes out to the mound. I go, what are you doing out here? He goes, hey. He goes, throw the curveball. I go, no. I said, who's calling this? He said, not me. And so I look over to my dugout, and my coaches aren't even, they're doing something else at the time. I go, who's telling you to call this? He goes, the guy behind me. The umpire, the plate umpire was going, let me see that curveball again.
Wow.
Let me see that curveball. I said, you tell him. I said, if I throw it, he's calling it. And sure enough, he did. So, you know, it was a lot of fun. But, you know, that was back in the 70s. And it was just, you know, that was before fences, outfield fences at Schoff Park or McMillan. Mm-hmm. They were both skin infields, but that was baseball to us. You know, the mounds were pretty much flat. So, played 3 years at Bishop Dwenger. We won the SAC championship as juniors with a 7-2 record.
Nice.
Senior year, we were about 500. Mm-hmm. And then I went on to St. Francis College at the time. Got a baseball scholarship.
So now St. Francis University.
Yeah. Okay. And before the end of the first semester, my mother became ill, and I had to leave school to go to work. Mm-hmm. And earn some money for the family. So I did that and just played some summer baseball with, now it's La Margarita, but it used to be Blackie's Corral Rib Bar in Stan Musial League, the Ochoas. And Leo Ochoa was kind of a mentor for me. And still to this day, I still see him, and he's a good friend. But that was back in like 1977. I played for Blackie's Corral Rib Bar. The first uniforms we had, the Blackie's uniforms weren't ready yet, so we had to use these purple and gold uniforms, DC, that had a great big Indian headdress on the leg, and we were the Los Lobos Indians, and the Los Indios Indians. And then thank goodness the Blackies unis were ready finally halfway through the season. But I played a year there and hurt my arm. And that was it until 1992.
So around 92, is that when you started playing in the adult league?
Senior baseball.
And so when did coaching become part of this as well? So like, I'm trying to get the timeline.
Okay. Well, when my son was in prep league, I helped out when he was in T-ball with a guy by the name of Rob Rolfe. Mm. And his son and my son were pretty good as 6-year-olds. And in fact, those two kids got banned from playing the infield in T-ball because they used to get three outs. If a ground ball was hit, Robbie was playing short, he'd throw to first, my son would catch it, and we'd step on the bag and out. You know, we get three outs. It was 7 runs or 3 outs.
Yeah.
And so we'd typically always get the 3 outs, and the other coaches said, well, our kids aren't getting enough at bats now because of this. And so
hit it somewhere else.
So they banned my son and his son from the infield. Mm. And so I asked, just questioned. I said, so we're being penalized because we play catch with our sons.
Right.
Well, don't look at it that way. But anyway, that's no, I'm not bitter anymore. But no, it was fun. And then I coached the Cheeseburgers Prep League team when my son was 8 down at St. Joe Little League. And that was a lot of fun. And you look back and you see the roster, you see the names. Mm-hmm. And there's so many people that are now professionals that, hey, I got the honor to coach them. And then coach minor league, little league. And then, I was president of St. Joe Little League back mm-hmm. in 1993.
Yep.
1,100 families were involved in the league at the time. And it was the only year I did it. But then... started coaching in high school. I was a volunteer assistant at Bishop Dwenger starting in 1995.
Okay.
And coached off and on there until about 2005. And then Gary Rogers and I have been on the Northeast Indiana Baseball Association board.
Know that name.
Yep. Together. And he'd been at Lures for years, won a state championship with Kevin Kiermaier and company out there. But he was at Leo now. And he just happened to
ask. Still
not
in the Indiana Baseball Coaches Association Hall of Fame.
He needs to be.
Agreed.
He needs to be. But we, you know, we were at a meeting and it was, hey, you know, if you're not doing anything, why don't you coach? And like, eh. You know, Dave Bischoff at New Haven had asked me and I didn't know if I had time. And, and all of a sudden Gary asked me and it was kind of a moment of weakness. So let me check with my wife because from where we were living in Grable was only 5 minutes from the Diamond at Leo.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, eh. So I came home and asked my wife, Diane, I said, hey, I got asked to coach high school at Leo. And she said, you told him yes, didn't you? I said, no, I told him I'd have to talk to you. She goes, well, do it. She goes, baseball is your passion.
That's right.
And so I said, yeah, she said, okay. You know, it's funny because then we go to the Wildcat banquets and things like that because yep. I'm just a big fan of Wildcat baseball.
Same.
And it seems like about every time Coach Rogers sees my wife, he thanks her. Thanks for letting him coach. You know, and but no, it's been a blast. And I said, of course, we just recently had the Northeast Indiana Baseball Association banquet, and being the president, I also get to emcee it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did mention that the game of baseball is such that you create a fraternity wherever you are.
That's right.
I was texting back and forth last night with a buddy of mine who I played Connie Mack baseball with at age 17. And so that would have been 50 plus years ago for both of us. And to this day, we still text back and forth from time to time. But I mentioned there that if you take all the people away from Diane and my life that we met through baseball, we wouldn't know many people.
Mm.
And that's what the fraternity of baseball is all about. Well, it's a pretty cool thing.
It did feel like a brotherhood when you go in there. And like, and that was my first time there. And still, you know, all the people that were excited to meet me as well.
Sure.
That I had never
because
met.
Of what you've done. Well, this podcast alone is, you know, what you've done for the game and just highlighting things that need to be highlighted that weren't in the past.
Yeah.
So that's the great part.
And speaking of highlighting things that I believe need highlighted. So for people like me that I don't want to say late bloomer because like I really wasn't because I played baseball. I played Wildcat. I took a couple year break. I pretty much played Wildcat until like 10. So like I think Wildcat starts at what? 4 or 5?
6, I think.
6.
Yeah.
I started at 6, played for a few years. And then I started playing at Elmhurst Little League, made All-Star 2 years in a row. And then I took a 2-year break from playing baseball. Actually, no, I played 3 years at Elmhurst Little League. And then I took a break. So I played from 10 to 13, 14-ish. And then I didn't play again until my junior year of high school. You know, and obviously... you know, have my reasons why I didn't play as just doing other things, being goofball, and then got back into baseball. So I played 2 years of baseball in high school. Too late, you know. If I would have played all 4 years, I might have been able to walk on somewhere, maybe get like a small scholarship offer from an area school or something. But wasn't the case for me. So luckily there was this league that I had not heard of. Like, I had heard nothing. I don't even remember exactly how I heard about the league to begin with coming out of high school. I really don't remember how I heard about the Fort Wayne Adult Baseball.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it was the first year in existence.
Yeah, I was like, I really don't know how I found out. But I still wanted to play baseball. It's like, man, I just fell in love with the game, and now it's over. Like, I don't want it to be over. And so I found out about the Fort Wayne Adult Baseball League. They had tryouts out at Shove Park, and I killed it in tryouts. And so I was offered a spot on the team by Troy Lehman.
Yeah.
Troy Lehman. Yep. He was the manager of the Yankees.
Yankees with Shan Davis. Yes. And Ryan Kiefer.
Yes. You know. You know him.
Kemery. Yeah. And all those guys.
Solid team.
Jake Richardville, who's now Dr. Richardville.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solid team. I got offered a spot. Hit really good in the tryouts, which, you know, I'm just coming out of high school. So I was hungry. I was ready to play. And so hit really good. They offered me a spot. And played really well, but like you have been a part of that league as well for, you know, for a while. Talk about your association with that league.
I started out with a men's senior baseball league. The gentleman that originated everything in town was a gentleman by the name of Dan Esch. Mm-hmm. And Dan had researched, he'd seen something in a magazine called Cigar Aficionado about this league out of Long Island, New York that was going national. And so he called, got information from a gentleman by the name of Steve Sigler, who originated everything. And so he talked to Ben Smith, the Journal Gazette writer, who had an article in the Sunday morning paper about, hey, new adult baseball league forms, you know, in Fort Wayne. Mm. And so I had a couple of questions, so I gave him a call, and he, because his number was in the article. And then I had another question. I gave him another call. And then I talked to my next door neighbor, Greg Martin, who used to play at Elmhurst back in the day. And I told him about it. He said, yeah, he'd be interested. So we then had more questions. So Dan said, why don't you just come to a meeting? Mm. And so we did. We got it started. I helped. And it was a four-team league. We played a six-game pilot program league out at IPFW at the time. Mm-hmm. Matt Kinzer was the coach there, and I think we got some helmets from Matt, and we got it started. And we had T-shirts and caps, and it was the Reds, the A's, the Dodgers, and the Angels. Mm. Those four teams in 1992, and got it going, and we got close enough that, okay, yeah, we had a tryout at Northside Park. We had 52 guys show up for this. So that was enough to at least field lineups for all four teams.
Right.
And then some. So we did that. And then the next year in 1993, we all went to Major League replica uniforms. Mm. We went to eight teams. There was enough interest. We marketed properly. And ever since, you know, the national organization, the Men's Senior Baseball League, out of Long Island, New York, Melville, New York, would hold a national tournament, a World Series out in Phoenix, Arizona, at the spring training complexes of the major league teams, and also a fall classic down in Tampa, St. Pete, where the same spring training complexes. So I got the chance to play in Clearwater, where the Phillies train, at the Carpenter Complex, and, you know, Sarasota at the Ed Smith Stadium, where the Orioles are. Al Lang Stadium, which is where the Cardinals and Phillies used to play their spring training games. So the first time I got to pitch there, I'm standing on the mound, and being the, you know, goofy historian, you know, I'm thinking, wow, Steve Carlton and Bob Gibson have both been on this mound looking in the same, you know, same view that I'm getting right here. And it just chills, you know. Now, I got hit pretty hard, but unlike Mr. Gibson, Mr. Carlton, but it was that. You got to scratch an itch of loving baseball and still having a little bit of ability to play, but not like you used to. You know, everything was fine until you would see video of yourself and go, oh my gosh, I'm slow motion now compared to what I used to be.
I could only imagine if I had to watch video of myself.
Oh my gosh.
You know me. I hate even listening to myself on the podcast. Well, when we're in the studio before talking sports and 260 Dugout's playing on 1380, I don't even have the volume on because I hate listening
to myself. I'm the same way. You know, and the funny thing was, we played out at IPFW, and when I pitched it back in 1992, my son was 11 years old, and he was a pitcher in Little League, and I go 3-1 on a batter, and from right beside the dugout, my son's leaning against the dugout. He yells out, "Just throw strikes, Dad." And I look in and I'm thinking, you think I'm trying to throw balls off the plate? You know, no, I am. But then it hit me.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I've been saying that for years to kids.
Yep.
Why am I saying that when they're trying their best?
Right.
But I'm saying just throw strikes. It's that easy.
Mm-hmm.
So from then on, I, you know, that taught me a valuable lesson at the time. But but I made so many friends. I think, you know, through that league, I don't know how many enemies, probably a few, but, you know, I was able to help run the league and you know, administer some of the suspensions and things like that when things got out of hand. But no, that I played 30 seasons. I played 20 seasons and then took the 2012 year off and got a phone call from a guy by the name of Gino Hauser that said, "Hey, the Yankees are looking for somebody. You want to play with us next year?" Now, the Yankees, you know, they were good. They were studs. And I think, sure, yeah, I'll just be on the roster. I get to the first Yankee game, and the manager of the team was Tom Gaskell. I mean, Tom Gaskell was the be-all, end-all. He's one of the best catchers to ever come out of Fort Wayne. And he flips the ball to me and goes, "Here, you're starting." I thought I was just on the roster. You know, you want me to start? So we ended up winning. And that first year, we lost. We were like, I don't know, 19-1 and won the championship. But but it was so much fun, and these guys embraced having me on the team, and I played another 10 years. So I played 30 seasons, and then my hips decided to betray me.
Yep.
So there we go.
So after all this time, you continue, like you said, You'll never pay it back, but all this time you're still today giving back to the game of baseball. You're still coaching.
Yes.
Still coaching.
Coaching at Leo. Coaching the JV. This is my seventh year. And of course, as some people know, I had a little health issue starting on St. Patrick's Day, and I had a triple bypass 2 days after St. Patrick's Day and was told to take it nice and easy. And so I was only able to make 18 games we played, thanks to, you know, my coaching staff, Sean Marquardt and Dean Kellogg and Derek Boyer. I mean, everything went well. We were like 13-5, but I wasn't able to coach, and that broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended. Careful. Yeah, but you know, I've coached seven seasons there. Gary Rogers is the ultimate professional when it comes to organizing. I just, as long as Gary's there, I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they still want me. And I love interacting with the kids. And, you know, it was interesting because the kids are freshmen and sophomores in high school. And, you know, you would think maybe they all have agendas. Who knows? But these kids at Leo love the game of baseball. And then when I went down and ended up in the hospital, I got so many texts and messages, you know, "Get better, coach. We've been praying for you. We love you." And that means the world.
Yep.
Just the fact that they would take time out of their day. I had one kid that said, "Hey, coach, you know, if you're bored up in the hospital, I'll come up and we can talk some baseball." And I thought, you know, go figure, you know. And then another, you know, that was Nolan Butcher, who's just signed with Butler. And another kid, Tanner Reynolds, said, "Coach, hey, you up for visitors?" You know, well, I was going home, and so I got home. Tanner comes to the house.
Wow.
And we just sat and shot the breeze for a while. But these are just players, and you never know as a coach when you're going to impact someone. You know, Jake Richerville, I talked about him earlier. He's a physician now. He works at Parkview. He went to Notre Dame, walked onto the football team, and kind of a Rudy-like situation. But Jake played for me at DeWanger JV baseball for a couple of years. And he came up to see me shortly after the surgery and told me that I'd made an impact on him. And there's no trophy bigger than that, DC. No. When somebody, a former player said, it remembers you and remembers you in a positive light.
Yep.
And that's what I try to do for the game of baseball, because I owe the game of baseball. So
100%. Yeah. I haven't coached as long as you have, but I did have my first, oh, hey, it's Coach Hendricks moment at the, my kid plays travel ball. His only year of travel ball this year. We're not doing it. Travel ball thing anymore after this year. Just not for us. But we're out at a travel tournament, Columbia City, and this team just got done playing, and my son's getting ready to play. And this kid, you know, I heard it in the distance. All I heard was, Coach Hendricks, Coach Hendricks. I'm like, all right, I only coached like a couple times, so I don't know who this could be. I turn around, it's a kid I coached out at Wallen. Was it last fall? Yeah, I think it was just last fall. And, you know, very excited to see me. He's one of my, you know, one of my rambunctious kids. You know, I was coaching 12-year-olds, so you know how that goes. But he was very, very hyper. But he was one of those kids that when I was getting ready, the guys ready to play a game, he was locked in. You know, he was that guy that was like, all right, I'm ready to play. His stepdad coaches at WITCO. And when it was game time, he was ready to go. But he was so excited to see me. He hadn't seen me since last fall. So, and just said, you know, that's still the most fun I've ever had playing baseball. And he asked me, was I still coaching? I said, not right now. And he was like, well, you should do it. You should really do it. And then, you know, I know you don't like the excuse of not having time. I know you don't like that excuse. Mm. I know you hate that. Cause
yeah. Well, when you look at your face, this, as soon yeah. As I said. Yeah. You know, people say, well, I would coach, but I don't have time. But yet I'll coach from the bleachers because I'll be at every game.
Yeah, those are the people, you know, yelling from the stands. Yeah.
And, you know, you do have time. You know, it's so many people that work a full-time job and then some and still manage their time properly.
Yep.
And it can be done, and it will pay off. One other quick story in Little League, when my son was in minor league, we had a 12-year-old that was on the team. His first name was Justin, and he came onto the team. He didn't make the majors, but he was in minors, and we thought as coaches, well, let's try him at catcher. He goes, oh, I've never caught. And we said, well, put the gear on, and you know, and he was actually pretty good.
Uh-huh.
And so we made him the catcher and kind of the leader of the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd come to the games, he'd ride his bike, and ride his bike home, and we didn't really see any parental, you know, parts of his life or anything like that. And then the last game of the season, we got done, and we were starting to split up and everything, and a lady walks up to me and said, are you Coach Jim? And I said, yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I can't stand you.
Whoa.
And I said, excuse me?
Right.
She goes, I can't stand you. And I go, I'm sorry, what's the problem?
Yeah.
She said, well, I'm Justin's mom. She goes, I am so sick of hearing your name. I can't stand it. She says, Justin will come home and say, Coach Jim said this, Coach Jim said that. She goes, that's all he talks about. She said, thank you. You've made a big impact on him. And that, once again,
yeah,
you talk about those trophies that, you know, aren't real, they're imagined, but those are the trophies that you will never have any bigger.
Those are the ones best than
that. And I was just so pleased. And then come to find out later, he didn't have a male figure in his life.
Gotcha.
Myself and a couple of the other coaches were the only male influences in his life. But then that only lasted that summer.
Mm-hmm.
But and that was that's what can happen if you step up and say,
it's true.
Yeah, I will coach. I will volunteer and coach. So,
that's very true.
There you go.
And speaking of trophies, kind of in a similar category, but after all these years, I think I always like to make the joke with you that you've been kicked out of more Hall of Fames than people have been in.
Yes, you are correct. I was honored to be in the National Men's Senior Baseball League Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was inducted in 2006. And yeah, and then I went into the Fort Wayne MSBL Hall of Fame, and then the Northeast Indiana Baseball HOF. Okay, later. But in the Men's Senior Baseball League, I was in the National Hall of Fame until our local league decided that we weren't going to buy our liability insurance from the league. We were going to go to an independent broker and purchase insurance through them. So they, for whatever reason, booted us out of that sanction of Men's Senior Baseball League and removed me from the Hall of Fame. And at the time, I had been in there for about 6-7 years, and Dan Esch, who I talked about organizing the league, he had passed away from ALS, a 5-year battle with ALS. And the one thing I asked of Mr. Steve Sigler of the Men's Senior Baseball League was, okay, you kicked me out of the Hall of Fame. I said, I'm very disappointed, but please do me a favor. Do not remove Dan Esch from the National Hall of Fame. And he did not. So I said, that man did nothing to incur the wrath of the national organization, and they didn't. So, you know, but I had a great time, met a lot of great people, regardless of, yes, I was kicked out of a Hall of Fame.
I love doing that to you. So before we go, I do want to, you know, make this public as well before we go. So you did mention you are the president of the NEIBA.
Yes.
And I just want to thank you publicly for the Bob Parker Award, which is for media coverage. You obviously know I don't do this for recognition. Because I do it to give my love back. This is my way of giving it back. I love highlighting these kids, both, you know, girls and boys, softball, baseball. I do it all the way from Little League all the way up. And that's why I enjoy it, is because it's my way of giving back. So I appreciate you for even thinking of me as a possibility to win this such prestigious award. Bob Parker is a name that if you don't know it, please learn it. Very, very, legendary name in Fort Wayne. So I couldn't thank you more for even thinking of me to be even associated with this kind of award.
Well, I appreciate that, DC. However, I wasn't the only one on our 10-person board.
Correct.
Yep. To mention you as a candidate and to nominate you for this award. There were others that also spoke up on your behalf and for what you've done with this podcast to bring baseball to the forefront. And yeah, like we said, you know, this has been needed for so many years, and here it is now. It's come to fruition, and it's just a great opportunity to highlight teams, players, coaches, you know, whether it's baseball, softball, people that give 100% and don't ask anything in return. Or there are some people that down the road, you know, you look at a Trey Deckman, who, my gosh, I mean, his talent and his future are golden, you know. So, I mean, but we know him now where perhaps we didn't in the past. But that's part of what the Northeast Indiana Baseball Association does. We nominate Hall of Famers each year and a Bob Parker Award winner for those that help in media. And there are still several that are, you know, we need to bestow honors upon. And then the Colin Lister Award for those with just contributions to baseball, with not so much media, but otherwise just the volunteer work and everything, and you know, being part of the baseball community.
So in addition to me winning the Bob Parker Award, just quickly talk about the other you know, award winners and the three people that were inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Adam Roser was the Colin Lister Award winner. And if you've ever had anything to do with the World Baseball Academy out at the Ash Center, he is likely going to have crossed your path. Mm-hmm. He is basically one of the right-hand men of Caleb Kimmel. Caleb and Kristen out there that have done so much for the game of baseball. And Caleb himself is a Hall of Famer. It's Adam is just works tirelessly in what he does and schedules so many games and oversees everything out there at the Ash Center baseball related. The three award winners were Scott Gidley, who was a former Northrop Bruin baseball player, who, my gosh, he played at Northrop. He pitched at IU, and has still given back to the Northrop Bruins baseball organization, you know, over the years too. And so, I mean, it's him. Josh Van Meter is another one who, you know, was synonymous with success in baseball from this area. You know, grew up in Ossian, went to Norwell, played for the Summit City Sluggers, played for, you know, got drafted fifth round by the San Diego Padres out of high school, and played for the Tin Caps twice. First time, then he broke his leg and then came back. He was still at low A at the time. But then look where he ascended. You know, he ends up in the Reds organization after a trade and you know, played Major League Baseball. My goodness, you know. And then Randy Miller from the Portland Rockets. And now, you know, being at the banquet, you know all about the Portland Rockets.
I do.
But he has been synonymous with Federation Baseball and its success over the years, and what he does to organize that Portland Rockets team is just phenomenal. But those were the three inductees into the Hall of Fame. Yourself and Adam Roser were honored as well. And we had a great meal. And, you know, we just put it out that the Northeast Indiana Baseball Association is there, and we're going to continue to be there. And we'd like to honor the Dick Crumback High School Baseball Player of the Year. And, you know, it's and with that, the Dick Crumback family, through a trust fund, will donate $500 to the baseball program in which the Player of the Year comes from. This year it was Columbia City. And so they were bestowed a $500 check at the Tin Caps game the other night with an on-field presentation, thanks to the Tin Caps for letting us honk our horn a little bit too. So, we're probably about 30 minutes now, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. We surpassed it a while ago, but when I have,
sorry,
this is, you know, I had to bring you on. It's been long overdue. And we could easily, we could go another hour if we, you know, were able to, but I couldn't thank you more, you know, for, you know, being a part of the success of this podcast, promoting it, telling people about it, just being a good friend, being in my life, teaching me things, and just helping, you know, share each other the love of baseball. I couldn't thank you more for coming on this podcast and telling us a little bit about your story, highlighting that, and keep doing what you're doing. You know, the NEIBA is highly respected in this area. It should be even more, and, you know, appreciate all that you do for the game of baseball.
Well, DC, I love you like a son, man. I know I didn't know exactly what I was going to do when Justin Kenny stepped back from his producer co-host role, but the first text I made was to you and told my wife I was going to do that. And she goes, well, I figured you would. And so you responded within 2 minutes, and we were good to go. And also, I mean, yourself, when I have my medical issues here this spring, you stepped up to the plate immediately. You and Adam Lundy, Blake Sebring as well. But I couldn't have continued the show without you guys. And so for that, I'm in your debt as well.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
Mainly did it because, you know, obviously I wanted to, you know, help you in any way I can. And the one way to help you was to, you know, because I'm what you would want me to do is make sure that show keeps rolling.
Well, yeah, because, you know, and also the reception in the hospital wasn't great. So, you know,
that's true. Yeah.
I wasn't, had to have this coming out of the studio and not out of a hospital bed.
Right.
But no, thank you for everything you do for the game of baseball. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. Thank you.
If you're listening right now, I want you to picture this scenario. You're on your way to practice or running late for a game. We all do it. You hop in the car, you get it started. Just like that, boom, tire pressure light comes on. Brakes start squeaking. Dashboard lights up like the stadium lights on a Friday night. But don't stress. Relax. Take it to McMahon's Best One Auto. They got you from quick oil changes and flat tire repairs to brakes, alignments, and engine diagnostics. And just like that, they'll get you back on the road fast. That way you don't miss practice, the game, or hanging out with your friends. With 8 locations in Fort Wayne, New Haven, Lima, Ohio, and Bryan, Ohio, McMahon's Best One's got your back. So why wait? Schedule your appointment today at McMahon'sBestOneTire.com. McMahon's Best One, keeping you ready for game day.
Shout out to the NEIBA. We're very excited for the 260 Dugout Podcast. We got a two-time guest. We got a lot to catch up on. I talked to this young man like a month ago, and we already have a whole nother interview's worth of content to talk about. This man's been the busiest senior high schooler I think I've ever met in my life for the past for the past few weeks. We got Trey Deckman. Can't say Columbia City anymore.
I know. It's kind of crazy, but...
It's crazy. How did everything go? Let's start there, man, before we even get to baseball. How did graduation go? How did everything go for you?
It went really well. Actually, after graduation was about like the week break I had from everything. So enjoyed that. Hung out with my friends about every day that week. Just kind of adjusting a little bit to what life's about to be like in the next 3 months.
Yeah, so. welcome to adulthood, young man.
Yeah.
welcome. And you're off to a good start. So the last time I talked to you, you were just a finalist for the NEIBA Dick Crumback High School Baseball Player of the Year. And of course, everyone knows now, you know, it's been announced. I know because I was at the awards with you. So I know everything's come out. You were named the High School Player of the Year from the NEIBA. Mm-hmm. Just talk about what that honor means to you and the ceremony. And just talk a little bit about, you know, some of the people that have been part of your journey and who you would thank for that award.
Yeah, sure. The ceremony was awesome just to see, you know, it's fun to be around a bunch of baseball people and to hear everyone speak on their own experiences. And no, I was super honored to win it. You know, I kind of said it in my speech just to even be nominated for it, but then also actually win the award means a lot to me. I could go down a whole list of people to thank, but probably the biggest one would be my parents. We live about 2.5 hours away from Grand Park. So weekends where tournaments start from Thursday to Sunday, and we're taking 5-hour round trips every day. They never complained about it. They never complained about how much it costs. I knew it wasn't cheap. They've always been bought in. I thank my older brother for being an inspiration to me. He never was, you know, the most outstanding player on the field. Went to Huntington as a PO and decided he wanted to hit and put on 30 pounds over a summer, and then was a starting center fielder the next year. So he's been a role model for me to look up to, and what I want to be like. So,
yeah, definitely a great year. How would you summarize everything from your high school career now that it's unfortunately over? What are some of the things that you look back on and will remember being the Columbia City Eagle?
Honestly, the best part about playing for Columbia City was the teams. Like when you ask that question, all I think about is like the bus rides back after wins. On the back, we got music going. We're all, you know, having a good time. That's all I think about. It is sad to move on because those are some of my best friends, that I probably won't see for a while, but, definitely the best 4 years of my life. So
I love that you didn't say anything about wins, anything about losses. No matter what the outcome of the game was, you still will remember the bus rides back, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Yeah. And
that's what I want everyone to take away from that answer. I love that answer because that is all you remember. Regardless if you go on to win state, or you go to state and you lose, or if you go to semi-state, or if you get eliminated in the first round of sectionals, you're going to remember the bus rides. You're going to remember the friends, the bonds that you built, the growth that you sustained throughout those years. I love that answer a lot. I really love that answer. So take some notes, young people that are listening to this episode. So yeah, you turned the page. So a lot has happened. So when I talked to you last, you were going to be a Ball State Cardinal.
Yeah.
And that talk about the process first before we even get to where you're going next. Mm-hmm. Just talk about the process and what played a factor into reopening your recruitment.
Yeah, it was just you know, I don't want to say there's nothing like Coach Maloney or if anyone them, you know, here's just like, I wish them the best. I just thought that I wasn't going to be happy there. So I kind of just took a chance on myself to try and find somewhere else that I would enjoy more. I'm just talking to a few players that went there, said they didn't enjoy it. And I kind of heard some other things too. So I was just, you know, really on the fact that if I'm going somewhere, I want to make sure I enjoy it. I don't want to not like my time on the field, because that's what I've been, I've loved it every since I was young. So I don't want to go somewhere where I could potentially not. So.
Yeah, it's a huge decision. And so you decided to reopen your recruitment. And then before we even made this college decision, for the new decision, what else have you been up to after that? I mean, you would think that you would just be sitting in a room with the pen and a pad, you know, doing pros and cons of all the other programs that have offered you. But instead, you've decided to be even more busy and take on some new things and be doing some other stuff. So what what else have you been doing, you know, throughout the midst of reopening your recruitment?
Yeah, I reopened my recruitment on a Tuesday and then – or a Thursday, one of the days. And then, like, within 3 days, I went to down to Butler for a Rays workout, then drove up to Wisconsin the next day for a Marlins one, then drove to Chicago for a college one. Came home, then the next day went up to Comerica and did a workout for the Tigers, which will be the coolest experience I'll ever have in my entire life. Getting to take BP there. It was like they told us, like, because I wasn't taking live ABs just because I couldn't get injured when I don't have a college. And they told me I'm good to leave, and I just sat in the dugout for the next hour and a half because waiting for it to be over, because I didn't want to leave. Like, I was just sitting there enjoying it. So then did that one, then went over to Ann Arbor for a visit, and then came home. So then the next week went to a workout down in Cincinnati for the Rangers. So I think should be done with the workouts for now. Until, you know, I get called and then the next day I gotta drive somewhere and do it. So
yeah, it's been crazy. I've been trying to keep up. Some of those things you didn't even tell me yet. So I just found out about some of those. So exciting, though. I mean, there's a lot of people that would love to be in your shoes. Good problem to have. What was some of the feedback that you got? Did you get any feedback from anybody, you know, attending those? Or what were some things that you took away from all of that?
Mm-hmm. So usually after I go to one, like, my advisor will call them and talk to them just about how I did. And he's gotten really good feedback just about how my body moves. And, like, for me being as tall as I am, how, like how tight. You'd think, like, for being 6'3", 6'4", like, I'd be really loose, really a lot of swing and miss. But they like that I'm compact and I stay through the zone. So I've gotten really good feedback from the ones I went to. Dude, Comerica, it's deep. I'll tell you what, it's deep. It is very deep. I hit some balls. I was like, ooh, that's going to go. And it landed, like, it took, like, too hot to the wall. And I was just feeling like the littlest guy out there. So, I've gotten good feedback.
So no batting practice at Wrigley, huh?
I wish, man.
We might have to work some magic and make that happen. Wrigley, you know, we may know a couple people, so I might be able to hook that up. just saying, right. spend a little time with the Cubs organization. So
okay,
just picking on you with the Cubs. If anybody listens to the first interview, you'll understand.
Yes.
You mentioned briefly, and I love the tease that you made. You said you briefly made a stop in Ann Arbor. What were you doing in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, went on a visit there right after my workout with Detroit. And it was freaking awesome. Just the campus and, you know, like, there isn't really a better in terms of not even talking about baseball, but just in terms of colleges, like, what if a college you wanted to go to, like, there's not very many better opportunities than Michigan. And then talked with Coach Smith, and he gave me a really good offer, one I couldn't refuse. And I was kind of just on the spot. Like, I knew Michigan was where I wanted to go. And when he told me what I'd be getting, I was like, yeah, like that's where I told my dad before. I was like, just they make it easy, I'm going there because that's where I want to go. So
I hear that. Yeah. So catch everyone up. Took a visit to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor and commits. He's becoming a Michigan Wolverine. and very excited for this young man. Michigan's baseball program, obviously, completely sound. One of the best that we got, not only in the Big Ten, but nationally, across the country. There's a reason why you could play on that team in MLB The Show. If you make it on MLB The Show, you got a legit college program. No, all seriousness, though. Very, very excited for that, you know, the new journey for you. And so you mentioned all of these, you know, all these workouts that you've done. You got a new college now that you're committed to. And I know how it goes, man. You got all this attention. So how do you assess, you know, all this attention you're getting from major league teams? You're committed to the college now. Is it just basically depending on, because the draft will be coming up soon, is it basically just the situation, the organization that drafts you? How do you assess the process now?
It'll be a mix of what, because there's obviously different organizations have different styles on how they develop players. So it does, it depends on the organization. It also depends on how much money they're willing to give me. With Michigan, I'm getting a really good offer to go there. So to go professionally means that I wouldn't have the opportunity to go play college baseball anymore. So I want to make sure that if I'm going professionally, I want to make sure that's for enough money where I can set up for my future. So it'll be a lot talking through with my advisor just about what we want to do when it comes to teams and what type of money I want to get drafted for, which I should be having. We'll be talking a lot over the next few weeks to try to figure that out. So we'll kind of see how it plays out, because some of it's just luck. Some of it's luck. I have this team slotted to pick me that I really want to go to, and that is really an offer me the money I want to. But then a shortstop that another team was supposed to draft falls down and no one picks them, so then they end up picking him up. So it's just a lot of moving pieces, a lot of moving parts. So we'll just see how it goes.
I love it. I love it. Very excited for that process. And so what are you working on right now? Like, what is a potential major leaguer coming out of high school / already committed to a top program in college? Like, and you've already had a busy last couple of weeks. So like, what are you working on, and how often are you working on your game right now?
Yep. Just got yesterday, 2 days ago, on a program with Donovan Clark. He works out players.
That's my guy.
Sounds out of so Indy. Much. Brayden Montgomery, White Sox. He just made his debut. Hit the walk-off home run. He works with him. He works with a bunch of really good players out of Indy, like baseball specific wise. So I just got in a program with him this past week, in terms of strength and conditioning wise. And then me, my dad, and one of my teammates that's going to Indiana Tech, Avery Freeman, we go out to the field every day at 10, and kind of just go through a progression through the week. So Monday is all flip and T work, and then we'll slowly just progress up. So then we'll go Tuesdays mainly flip, Wednesday will be mainly BP, and then by Thursday and Friday we're just competing off the machine out in the field. So in terms of training wise, is what we're doing, and then maybe once every 2 weeks just do live ABs with some of the guys that are coming back from college that need to throw. We'll go out in the field and host live ABs.
I think I asked you this in the last interview, but I want to go to your mind. I'm not sure if I asked you this the first time, but I want to get inside your head a little bit. The first time you heard, you're getting ready for a game, the first time you heard an MLB team was coming to watch you, what was going through your head?
Dude, I was like sitting in class. I get a text from my advisor that the Rangers are going to be there today. And I'm just sitting there like, that's all I'm thinking about all day. I'm just like, all right, just gotta get a few hits. And you end up playing Carroll, and I had an all right game. It's like, let's, you know, it's just like, it definitely by the end of the year it was easier. It became easier to play in front of him, but no, dude, that first game, definitely nerve wracking. Every at bat, like thinking I gotta do so much. But dude, yeah, I was lot going through my mind the whole bus ride. I was just like, head was spinning. It was crazy.
I could only imagine. Like, I'm just picturing, like, honestly, I'm picturing like a goofy comedy, like something similar to like the bench warmers or something, and like you're going up to bat and it's just like freezes and goes dark, and then like everyone's just like, everyone's watching you, and you like the sweat starts pouring off. and you're just looking around like, man, I feel him watching me. And they're like, there's a scout somewhere like 50 yards away with some binoculars or something looking at you. Yeah, scary. I could only imagine what was going through. But you've put in the work. You continue to put in the work. You just said you work every day, which is, hey, if you want to be a professional, that's what you got to do. You got to work every day. And there's people that are ready for that grind, and there's some that aren't. So very excited for your future, whether it is Michigan, whether it is in Major League Baseball. I'm very excited for you no matter what. I am proud of you. Just watching you grow throughout the course of the season, watching you win the award and have the second best speech at the NEIBA Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Yeah, I mean, at some point, I got to be doing something.
Dude, well, I didn't even know I had to give a speech. And then your speech was really good. I was like, shoot. Like, I was like sitting there. I was like, what am I going to say? So I had to follow it. I think I did okay, but definitely not as good as yours, but.
No, it's all good, man. You did really good. You did really good. So yeah, very excited for you. Keep in touch for sure. I know we have each other's contact. I'm very excited. I have not been to Ann Arbor before, so I look forward, if that is where you'll be playing, I look forward to come watching you, checking out some games. Very excited for you, Trey. Keep going, and congrats to you and your family, man. Keep in touch.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thanks for having me.